The Hard Shoulder with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman on News Talk.
Now, as US and Iranian forces clashed in the Gulf and the United Arab Emirates came under renewed attack, President Donald Trump says a ceasefire is still holding. And joining me now is Dominic Waghorn, Sky News International Affairs Editor. Good evening to you, Dominic.
Good evening, Ciara.
Where are we at now? An exchange of fire, the ceasefire, is it holding, is it not holding? Does it depend on who you ask?
I think it's a very good question. Yeah, it depends on your sort of perspective. You know, I think it's fair to say it has been another whiplash week. We sort of began it thinking that we were heading back to full-scale escalation. Then we heard that the Americans were imposing Project Freedom, having said the epic fury, the war they had unleashed on Iran with Israel, was over. And then the day after, we had heard from Rubio and Hegseth sort of saying that Project Freedom was the only game in town. That was a military plan to force open the strait. Donald Trump then decided he had sort of gone off the idea, suspending it, and saying that there was hope for diplomacy, with these hopes based on a sort of one-page memo that both sides seem to be aiming towards signing. Today, though, we've seen both sides trading both military blows, but also rhetorical blows. Iran's Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi saying the US is guilty of a reckless military adventure, and Donald Trump warning Iran, if it doesn't sign up to this deal, it could end up one big glow, which has sort of been seen as a sort of cryptic reference to nuking Iran. And if he wasn't such a, you know, given to so much exaggeration, that would be deeply alarming. But I think with Donald Trump, you sort of take it in your strides, don't you? I think it's fair to say that with these two sides are like sort of sumo wrestlers, locked in sort of deathlocks, both hoping the other side will blink first. And I think we've moved on now to them both sort of jabbing each other. But it is still a ceasefire if both sides said it's a ceasefire, which sounds rather perverse, doesn't it, to us, given that they're shooting at each other, trying to attack each other's tankers and ships. But until it goes back to full-scale war, it is effectively a ceasefire, which I guess is the only good news we can say at the end of this week.
Yeah. Dominic, do you see any end in sight? I mean, we've been talking about off-ramps for such a long time, and we know that the US does want out, perhaps underestimated the ability of Iran to endure, perhaps underestimated the effect of their control of the Strait of Hormuz. But do you see any likelihood, there was talk several times of breakthroughs potentially happening. What's your sense of where we're at?
Well, I think it's fair to say that both sides don't want to go back to full-scale war for different reasons. The Pakistani mediators that we have been in touch with say that they do think there is diplomatic progress for that reason, but also both sides do seem to be heading towards... Now, it wouldn't be a final agreement, obviously, this one piece of paper, but it effectively would be a framework agreement, which was kind of agree to suspend war for the next 30 days at least, and then agree on how to discuss the rest of it, which would focus on the nuclear issue, the Strait of Hormuz, and other issues. Now, I mean, if there is progress, and mediators say there is, then that's a good sign. The difficulty is still both sides seem to think they have the upper hand. And that's unrealistic. Only one of them can. And I think, you know, it's a question of who has the greatest appetite for pain. Both seem to think that they can outlast and outblink, you know, outstare the other without blinking first. I think if you look at Iran, it has an ability to absorb a huge amount of economic pain. It's also a brutal dictatorship, and whatever trouble it has at home, it just goes out on the streets and shoots people until they stop complaining. Donald Trump doesn't have that, and he's got the midterm election. So you'd have to say the clock is sort of running against him. But at the moment, we're still in this sort of weird sort of game of both thinking they're winning. And the danger with that, of course, not just because it's whacking up the price of petrol and other things for the rest of us, because it's causing this global energy crisis. The danger, of course, is that that is unsustainable, and it could end up ending up in some misunderstandings and full-scale escalation.
And of course, we're hearing that inflation in Iran has hit 70% over the past number of weeks. Maybe finally, you said that they both insist on having the upper hand. Do you think either of them does?
I think Iran does. I mean, having been to Iran, I was there for going into the third week of the war. And what was clear was that the government in charge, it does seem to be sort of, there are some divisions within it, but it has an ability to impose its will. And this sort of Iranian culture of resisting and not surrendering and being martyrs, that works in their favor. And they have found any number of ways to get around sanctions over the last, 10, 15 years. They're very resourceful. And Donald Trump has this problem. He has the politics of the midterms looming He has prices rising. He is at the lowest level, I think, of any American president since the Second World War in terms of his approval ratings. He's failing to improve the cost of living crisis, and he's getting hammered for that politically. So if that's the perception in Tehran, they're going to hang on until they see Donald Trump blink. Yes, inflation is, you know, at eye-watering levels in Iran. That was hugely painful for the Iranians I was speaking to. But what can you do? You know, the price of everything's going up. You can't go out in the streets and protest. If you do, you'll get shot. So it's very difficult. And I think, therefore, the regime there still has the upper hand. And as long as it thinks it can, it's going to try and see this out. And the question is, can Donald Trump hold his nerve on the other side of things?
Dominic Waghorn, Sky News International Affairs Editor, thank you so much for joining us. Now, Dominic did mention the price of oil and the price of petrol. I'm joined now by Lisa Ryan, Professor in Energy Economics at the UCD School of Economics and UCD Energy Institute. Lisa, very interestingly, CEO of Fuels for Ireland, Kevin McPartland, saying it could be several years due to the infrastructural damage that we've seen to oil refineries, etc. Never mind the lack of supply coming out through the Strait of Hormuz, but what's been damaged in terms of infrastructure before we see energy prices and fuel prices settle after this conflict. Does that not seem very much like a long time, and perhaps too long of a time frame?
Well, good afternoon. I think it's difficult to predict really, you know, the time frame for this. I think what we do know is that even if the war stopped tomorrow, that the energy prices would remain high. Because you know, the IEA, the International Energy Agency, has called this, you know, the greatest disruption to energy supply, you know, basically in living memory. And that isn't going to go away. You see in Qatar, you know, some of the LPG facilities have been bombed, and just the whole supply chain has been disrupted. So I think what we should be thinking about is, you know, we don't know exactly how long this will last. But we need to be ready for next winter when we will have, you know, we know that we will still have high prices, essentially. And so we need to, you know, plan for that in advance and use the few months that we have right now to see what we can do to make sure that we're a little bit, you know, insulated from that.
You've made some really interesting points. You've saying stop putting an oil burner, start insulating attics and start putting solar panels on people's roofs. That seems infinitely like common sense, Lisa.
Well, I would hope so. It's true that we have, you know, more than 700,000 homes with oil boilers in Ireland. And in fact, over between the two census periods, 2016 to 2022, that number increased by 28,000. So people have still been putting in oil boilers. And of course, there could be good reasons for that. We see that particularly in rural Ireland, that are, you know, where houses are off the gas grid. And so, you know, they can't put in gas boilers. And so there people have put in, historically, people would have burned peat. And so I'm guessing that 28,000 that increased, they may have been moving from solid fuel heating systems to oil heating. But some counties like Monaghan, Donegal, you know, it's nearly 70% of all households have heating oil. So we know that they are going to face very high prices next winter. I mean, the price already went up by nearly 80%. It nearly doubled, basically, since the war started. Now, prices have cooled a little bit, it should be saying. And I was having a quick check there. Commodity forecasts for autumn are to stay, yes, elevated, but not to, you know, they're not forecast to keep on increasing. Heating oil, unfortunately, is, you know, it's kerosene, and it is not the same as crude oil, and those markets seem to be more volatile. So what can we do? Well, if, you know, we need to make sure that every attic in the country is insulated. First of all, we need to reduce our demand for these fuels. And if you think about it, well, the government is kind of treading water, trying to, you know, keep people happy in the face of these high prices. But what we need to be thinking is, what we'd be better using that money to invest in making sure our demand goes down so that it's longer term, we have lower prices, lower costs. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, solar panels on every roof, they won't help you in winter because, well, we don't have very long days, but they will make sure that you nearly have free electricity during the summer. That'll offset those higher prices that you'll face in wintertime.
Yeah,
then, of course, insulating the house.
Yeah, look, I think you're absolutely right. And I think we need to be thinking about those things right now, because I'm not sure about the 5 years thing, but certainly in the short to medium term, we're in trouble with energy prices. Thank you very much for joining us, Lisa. That's Lisa Ryan, their professor in energy economics at the UCD School of Economics and the UCD Energy Institute.
The Hard Shoulder with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman. This is News Talk.